Podcasting from Wilson High School in Portland, Oregon, this is Somali Immigration. Our podcast is about just that, Somali immigration. Somalia is a poor, war-torn country on the Horn of Africa. It had a population of a bit over 10 million people in 2010, most of whom are Sunni Muslims. The land is primarily flat, with rising plateaus to the north, and most of the land is desert. The primary official language is Somali, but Arabic, Italian, English, and Swahili are common as well. The food they eat consists of corn, beans, rice, meat, milk, fruits, and especially bananas. Pork and alcohol are entirely forbidden. The people there are very close to their extended family. It is common for grandparents, aunts, uncles, and cousins all to live together. When Europe cut Africa up for themselves, Somalia was primarily targeted by Britain and Italy due to its useful location. The location allowed for quick access by boat to much of the Middle East, some of Asia, and much of the African coast. After Somalia won its independence in 1960, the country had a democratic government. This government did not last past 1969 due to the chaos of large numbers of varying parties. Mohamed Bar took control in 1969 and allied himself with the Soviet Union. They were allies until Bar attacked his neighboring country of Ethiopia. The Soviets allied with Ethiopia over Somalia, and in turn, Somalia lost this war. This loss, in addition to the rising rebel groups, led to Bar's fleeing of the presidential palace and his eventual loss of power. When the rebel groups took power, they had no way of sharing it and could not work together. This soon led to a civil war that broke out in 1992. The war caused much violence in communities. With no government, the country was falling apart. The only schools left were non-profits from out of country, as well as some private schools. The sudden collapse of government, as well as the increase in violence, caused many people to fear for their lives and flee the country. After 9 years of war, in 2000, a new government was formed and Ethiopia helped with the transition. The Somalis hated the Ethiopians for this, and more war broke out. Now the country is mostly in control of the Al-Shabaab. The Al-Shabaab is an Islamic group that uses violence to gain control. The war continues to this day. This information was provided by the Minnesota Historical Society. According to the previously mentioned Minnesota Historical Society, the most recent wave of immigration to the United States was in 1992 when the U.S. started allowing Somali immigrants to enter the country. This was very soon after the Civil War started. The majority of Somalis in the U.S. live in the Twin Cities in Minnesota. In 2010, an estimated 60,000 Somalis were living in Minnesota. The Somali people see the U.S. as a land of opportunity, and Minnesota has gained a reputation of having jobs, educational opportunities, and a rich Somali community.
However, the Somali refugee students that were interviewed for this project were not from Minnesota. They're high school students in Portland, Oregon. While we don't like to admit it, many of us aren't as familiar with modern immigration stories in America as we think we are. I'm not talking about ancestry and personal heritage searching. I'm referring to the refugees and immigrants who have restarted their lives over in America. I interviewed 4 Somali refugee students from David Douglas High School. If you didn't already know, David Douglas is the largest high school in Oregon and is known for its immense amount of immigrant students who attend it. Kids from Romania, Iraq, Sudan, China, India, Nepal, Mexico, you name it. But we're focusing in on Somalia. While for some it may be surprising to hear that there's a place in Portland, Oregon, the whitest city in America, that welcomes so many immigrants and refugees, but there is, and it's very much a reality. David Douglas is located in the heart of East County, Portland. The landing zone is another term for East County. Or to put it in other words, many people arrive in East County from other neighborhoods and countries. It's one of the more inexpensive places in Portland to live. David Douglas is a huge school that lies in between fast food restaurants and gas stations. By 2010, over 3,200 students were enrolled at David Douglas, and by now, more. The location is a place many people aren't always familiar with. The school hallways are big, there's vending machines and water fountains next to stairwells lit up by huge windows. You can hear 10 different languages being spoken at a time. There's multiple buildings and athletic centers. To an outsider, navigating that school would feel like being dropped into a foreign city. but the kids who go there seem to know their way around. The four students I talked to were all my age. They all had opinions and stories they wanted to share. The first people I talked to were Hakima and Abdul. They're siblings who moved from Somalia to Eritrea to America in 2013. Hakima was 13 at the time, and Abdul 14. Hakima is outgoing and kind. She treated me like a longtime friend more than someone who was interviewing her. She and Abdul are approachable and shy. So approachable, I almost forgot I was there to ask them questions about their move to America. First, Hakima and Abdul lived in Somalia. I asked them about it, but the truth is they don't have much memory of it. "I was too little," says Hakima. She's smiling. "I remember Eritrea. I had lots of friends there. I loved it," she said. Eritrea is a small African country above Somalia and Ethiopia. When I asked Hakima why they moved, she referred to the war in Somalia as the fight. Surprisingly, it's very common for most Somali immigrants to have never been to Somalia. Several were born in refugee camps. I asked one of the girls I interviewed named Sabrina if she planned on staying in America, and much like the other kids, she loves Portland. But she wanted to go back to Somalia someday and meet her extended family. The people I talked to like their school. They like most of their teachers and the people they go to school with. The four people I interviewed were all different but alike people. They shared interests when it came to school and friends, but they all have individual personalities and communication styles. They love that in America, you can be whatever you want to be. Abdul wants to be a firefighter, Muna wants to be a math teacher, and Sabrina wants to be a housewife. They like their friends and they all have someone they look up to. They all agree that the hardest part about moving to America was learning English. While many of us have never had to endure the struggles and hardships that our immigrant friends and neighbors have, we have to understand the importance of listening and using empathy. While we try to imagine situations and use empathy with those we talk to, we're learning how to be better citizens. Empathy is a key piece to making America better. Listening is just the beginning, and immigration stories are worth listening to. While many Somalis like Hakima and Abdul are lucky enough to end up in America, many are still stranded in camps, the largest of which is Dadaab, Kenya. The rows and rows of white tents are packed together, so close you can't see orange sand from above. There, refugees are being forced by the UN to return, despite a direct violation of international law.
The current situation in Somalia is getting worse. Where there was once water, there are now jagged cracks in the ground. Drought has seized the land. An outbreak of both cholera and measles were soon to follow, all while the conflict rages on. This in turn results in shortages of food, water, shelter, and medicine. Despite this, in 2015, the UN told refugees that it was safe to return to Somalia. Human Rights Watch aptly called this a violation of international law, citing the 1951 Refugee Convention. Though their actions are unlawful, the UN doesn't have many other options. According to the UN Refugee Agency, or the UNHCR, there are 235,269 registered refugees and asylum seekers in Dadaab. Most of these people are trying to flee Somalia. However, international aid has been all but broken since World War II, and there aren't enough resources to go around. According to an article written by the Washington Post, the solution the UN created was a program called Voluntary Repatriation. This consisted of offering $200 to each person that returned. Ironically, repatriation was all but voluntary. The reason for this being that the UN reduced food rations shortly after they introduced the program. As a result, the World Food Program states that refugees are only getting 70% of the nutritional requirement. This leaves refugees in a difficult spot. As Bess said by a Somali mother of three, quote, "You either die by the gunshot in Somalia or return back to starve in Dadaab." But they may die of the gunshot in Dadaab as well. Since they are all but starving and there is little to no work, refugees are forced to take out loans. Then, when they inevitably can't pay them back, they are threatened with violence. To protect themselves and their family, refugees are forced to take money from the UN and go back to Somalia. This pattern is so common that the UN has a currency conversion station where refugees receive their money, just so refugees can use their $200 to pay back their debts. Nonetheless, the UN claims that immigration is still voluntary and turns a blind eye to the fact that when refugees return to Somalia, they are much worse off the frying pan and into the fire, per se. In Somalia, they no longer have their refugee status, as they have returned to their war-ridden but home country, where there is no food, water, school, or health care. The only constant is the crack of gunshots. Many who return end up dying. Ultimately, many Somali refugees are caught, stuck between a rock and a hard place. They have no supplies and are being coerced to return back to a desolate and life-threatening environment. While many stories have a happy ending in America, many, many more will end tragically. This is just one body of immigrants, and there are millions of people just like them. But these people are not just statistics. They are humans. Each person has a story, and without aid, these stories will be lost. If we want to help them, the first step is to listen. And only when we are truly ready to hear will we ever be able to change.
You wake up in the middle of the night to the sound of your grandfather yelling. "Wake up, they're here," he yells, followed by gunshots that kill him. Your mother shelters you and your siblings in a pile of clothes to protect you from the violence. You continue to hear more gunshots ringing deaf in your ears. When you come out, there's blood everywhere and your family members are lying on the floor. This is exactly what happened to Somali refugee Arfarat Yasin as only a young boy. Arfarat Yasin was born in Mogadishu, Somalia. Somalia, a war-torn country located in East Africa, is known as one of the most impoverished countries in the world. It has suffered from lots of conflict and crisis for several years, including the Ogaden War with Ethiopia, which was a major political external factor. In 1982, the SNM, Somali National Movement, was formed, which soon turned into a full civil war in 1988 when it attacked government garrisons in Burko and Hargeisa. Somalia's political collapse came in 1991 with the end of the Cold War, when they lost their strategic importance to the West as well as their foreign aid. In 1991 to 1992 came clan-based warfare and famine, followed by several other conflicts in years to come. As a young boy, Arfarat's family became a target by Al-Shabaab, an Islamic militant group based in Somalia. Arfarat's family, like every other family in Somalia, was very poor, so they tried to find work wherever they could, often in selling and delivering water and ice, food, and fruits to government officials. Because his family was supporting government officials in this way, they became a target and were eventually attacked when he was only about 9 years old. Arfarat came to the United States, leaving his conflicted country completely alone when he was only 19. While he immigrated, who was left of his family, which was his mother and 8 of his siblings, all stayed in a Ugandan refugee camp. After he traveled to America, he lost complete contact with them until nearly 2 years later when he finally got a phone call from his mother. In the United States, he was utterly solitary, spoke hardly any English, was malnourished, and was meeting white people for the first time in his life. He began to struggle with anxiety and depression and was distant from the idea of wanting to connect with anybody. However, after attending therapy appointments, he, quote, realized a lot of things after being through therapy. Arfarat, the refugee from Somalia, said, quote, "My therapist made me not be silent anymore and speak out. Speaking about your life helps you feel less stressed. It's better than being silent." In the end, Arfarat had been able to make a better, more stable life than the one he had back in Mogadishu. He was a student at East Kentwood High School for 2.5 years and graduated in May of 2017. He plans on attending Grand Rapids Community College and working towards degrees in business and healthcare. He wants to become a urologist, which is a doctor who specializes in the study of treatment of the function and disorders of the urinary system. Even though he's had a good life in the U.S., his dream that his family would join him became further after President Trump's travel ban affecting 7 countries, including Somalia. His family was nearing the end of the process necessary before immigrating to the United States. But now they're forced to stay near their war-torn, politically unstable country. Conflict and violence is a real, serious crisis that has been affecting millions of people, but very few of them get a chance to immigrate to a safer country and lead a normal life. The continuous war in Somalia is anything but light and has been affecting their people for years.
Thanks for listening to Somali Immigration, brought to you from Portland, Oregon, by four high school students who are moderately qualified on the subject. See you next time. Maybe, but probably not.